What do you do when you're having a hard time? I get this question from so many people. I think the first thing to understand is that life is mostly a hard time, with wonderful periods of not so hard. But it is effortful and in many ways a struggle. And in certain cases, a brutal struggle. And at times it really is not fun. But because we've all had experiences where it is fun, where it is joyous, we somehow think the struggle is to get back to that, to the part that we enjoyed. And there's a kind of judgmental element that says the enjoyable part is good and desirable, and the hard part is not good and undesirable. And so many people approach the whole idea of a spiritual life to somehow get beyond the hard stuff. And of course, the real journey of a spiritual life is to engage the hard stuff, to engage the thing that is in front of you. This concept that if you have a spiritual life, everything will be sweet and beautiful is a complete illusion. The only thing that a spiritual life offers, and it is crucial to understand this, is that you stop resisting what is. So if life is presenting you with great difficulty, rather than thinking you need to change that into something else, you simply surrender. And you accept that this is difficult. And by not fighting it, by not resisting it, by not getting angry at it, by not thinking it's a punishment or whatever it is you bring to the table when difficult times arrive, and you just accept it as it is, the mere fact that you're not resisting it does not bring energy to it. It brings energy to you. And the energy in you can, in its deep surrender, take all of the energy of the difficult time and transmute it, if you will, into a creative approach to working with what's in front of you. So rather than have it obstruct you, rather than have it push you down, rather than have it diminish you, you take all of that energy and you just open and let it work. All life is energy. It's energy in motion or it's energy in obstruction. That's really, it's that all the time. It's flow, blockage, flow, blockage. When you're flowing, flow. When you're blocked, sit with it. Be with that energy. Don't fight it. And as you stop fighting it, it starts to alter its own aspect and become something that serves your development and your growth as a human being. We all know this. We don't grow through the easy times. We grow through the difficult times. You don't grow because life is sweet. You grow because life is difficult. You don't build a shelter when you don't need a shelter. But when you need a shelter, that's when the work starts. And that work is the work of your life. The universe is designed, life is designed to keep us in motion, to keep us productive. It's how the world works, guys, and we all know that. It works because it wants to sustain itself, to perpetuate itself, to keep itself evolving. And we are partners in that evolution. We are part of that enormous process, and every so often we get a glimpse of what we're in. Every so often we get to look at it and we are overwhelmed, really, by how extraordinarily lucky we are to be here. Learning to look at the hard times as part of this process, as an essential part of the process, allows you to engage as opposed to limit your capacity. It allows you to seek new possibilities rather than to avoid effort. It's all about your choice. And the great thing about a spiritual life, and Rudy said this from the beginning, is it gives you choice. And the choice is really very simple. How do I respond to what is? Do I close off, protect, resist, or do I accept, open, and engage? That's really the whole of it. Your entire spiritual practice is looking at that choice and making it consciously. Most lives are led unconsciously, which means hard times come, one goes into protective mode, one closes down, one complains, one suffers, one is unhappy, and stays that way until the atmosphere changes in some way and brings you back into happiness. And life is a kind of dance between those two polarities. It goes on and on and on. A spiritual life understands that is the process. This is how it works. You don't get angry at how it works. When the life that you live brings you struggle, you open to it and you engage it. This idea that was presented to me many years ago, which I've talked about, but I think it's such a simple idea. When you're on a river and the river is flowing and you're in your canoe and the sun is coming down through the trees and it's the river's all dappled with sunlight and you just enjoy the ride, when you hit the rapids, you cannot sit there and enjoy the ride in the same way. You pull out your paddle and you work your ass off to keep from submerging and to get through the rapids. That's what the job is. You work hard. You don't go, why me, God? The rapids come, and then it gets smooth. And the rapids come, and then it gets smooth. That's the ride to the ocean. That's how it works. And you are on that ride. Why are you on that ride? I will suggest that you chose to be. That you came here for that ride. And you came here pretty much knowing what it was going to be and then forgetting that that's the ride. And then you get angry at the ride. You're on it. You're on it because you want to be here. Not only do you want to be here, you fought to be here. This is an unbelievable, unbelievable gift to be present in this manifested state. It is the great gift of being. Every human being who's here has fought hard to come into this world. And why? Because by being born, by being alive, by being in touch with the struggle, you have an opportunity to recognize where you are and who you are. This opportunity is presented during the entire course of the ride. At any point along the way, you can stop being a victim of the universe and you can become one with it. You can begin to become aware of your place, your purpose, and your connection to this whole extraordinary reality that we're in. It is very easy and It is our nature to forget this. In fact, the world operates on forgetfulness. If we all remembered who we were, this would be a very different world. Very, very different. As far as I can tell, we're supposed to enter forgetfulness. We're supposed to be exactly where we are. We're supposed to be living the exact lives that we have. It's really kind of extraordinary when you think about it, but your life really couldn't be any different than it is. Your life is exactly what it's meant to be. It is the arrival at a series of endless choices that you have made that have brought you to this very second sitting here. You have made all the decisions that have made you who you are. You've created your body, you've created the world around you, you've created the forms of your existence. You may be aware of that, you may not be aware of that, but you are the absolute architect of your being, for better, for worse. Ultimately, it's not to be judged. All you can do is recognize that somehow you are responsible for who you are. And the capacity that you have to work the world is enormous. You have to decide to do that. You have to decide, this is what I want to do. It is not ultimately you as your ego form. It's you as your essential form. You don't know your essential form until you surrender your ego. Until you enter this meditative state and get really still inside and really quiet, do you begin to touch that which you truly are. That self is vast, infinite, eternal, and it is who you are. And it has created this entire phenomenological world for your experience. Your experience, not again in the ego sense, but in the cosmological sense. It wants to be as you want it to be. We have so much more responsibility for what the world is than we ever imagined. This is our creation. It is our individual creation. And the ego, mind, body, self, is a very small part of that. And we are deeply, deeply involved in it. Because this world would not create itself if we were not deeply connected to our personal drama, our personal drive, our personal ambition. All of that is essential to our being. But I'm saying, and this is so crucial, your personality, your mind, and your body are a speck of your true self. This true self is a collective in which we are all connected and we are all engaged. We are all part of this singular creative drama. And when we drive ourselves deeply into our extraordinarily expansive self, we discover our connection to each other and to truth and to the creative urge to make this universe in its own image. That's what we're doing here. And we can participate in this drama from the ego's perspective, which is to be lost in it, or from the self's perspective, which is to be one with it. To be one with the drama, to be done one with your life, to be one with this creative process is to be conscious, is to be awake, is to be partners in this unbelievable expansion of being. And you can choose that course. Or you can choose to forget and to be the unconscious participant in this. Does that matter? No. The universe is served by your unconsciousness as much as by your consciousness. If you want to go through this asleep, it's fine. The only problem in going through this whole thing asleep is that you suffer. And you suffer without knowing why. You suffer without having any consciousness of what to do about it, and it is an unhappy ride. Consciousness changes that. It doesn't mean that you don't suffer. It means that you suffer with gratitude. that you get it, that you are partners in the creative process that involves life being hard. So that you don't go through life saying, why me? You go through life saying, thank you. And you live it. You live it as fully and completely as you can. If you're lucky, you really do have this deep awakening to truth. And then there is no question about what I'm talking about. But until that happens, or if it doesn't happen, live your life with a occasional reawakening from something deep inside you that just says, keep going, it's okay. Keep going, you're fine. That is the gift that every human being has. Some people awaken completely. Some people just have this endless nudge that says, you're in a good place. You're doing it the way it should be done. And you can touch that by meditating. You can touch it by sitting still. You can touch it by stepping back a tiny little bit from each moment and just feeling this extraordinary sense of presence that tells you this is exactly as it must be. And you are exactly as you must be in this moment. And when you know that from some very deep place, suffering changes. I talked about this process that I went through in the hospital a year ago, where all of my practice failed me as a teacher, as a student of meditation, where it all went out the window, where the pain and the suffering were so great that I honestly could not surrender. I could not accept it. It was just too unpleasant. I lost all of my capacity to figure out what to do. And at that moment, I just said, I give up. I give up. I don't know what to do. And I have told you this, but it is core teaching. At the moment that I did that, it surrendered me. There was nothing for me to do. It just opened up a door, and there was no struggle left. There was no effort to make. There was nothing to be done because there was never anything I could do. It was not about me. There was no me to do it. It just happened. And in a way, that's what I'm talking about. You live your life in the struggle as best you can. You live your life in the joy as best you can. Being conscious of both, being appreciative of both, being partners in it. And when the ultimate time comes where you cannot move beyond anything on your own terms, where your own effort no longer functions, where there's nothing left that you can do, that's really when it takes over. And at that moment, you understand the value of all the years that you've put in to your own practice. Because when it takes over, something in you totally, totally lets go. I think the most important thing at this point in our lives is to own our practice. It's to own our spiritual life, to make it ours, to be responsible for it, to not make it, I'll come to Bruce and Bruce will do something for me, or I'll go to another student or another teacher and they will do it for me, that I'll go to God and God will do it for me. It's for you to go to you. It's for you to say, this is my daily work. This is what I do. This is my practice. And what happens when you start to really own your work is that it becomes your daily truth. It's your connection to the universe. It's not somebody else's. It's not something that comes and goes. It's there for you because it is something you have demanded. And I'm telling you, the only way to really grow spiritually is to make this the very centerpiece of your existence. It's not a casual thing. This is what it's about. Your life is about you living. being consciously alive, making conscious choices to be present in your life. If you do that, life will feed you and give you everything you need. If you don't do it, it will do the same thing, but you won't know it. So partner up. Get inside yourself. Own it. Live it. Be grateful for it. Stay one with it as much as you humanly can. And just know that you chose to be here, so be here. Any questions? Todd?
Bruce, this may be semantical in a way, but the opening statement of that life is mostly difficult feels more like we often forget, as opposed to life itself is difficult.
It could be semantical. Buddha said life is suffering. And I think he essentially is implying what you're saying, that in forgetting what life is, we suffer. By not forgetting, by staying awake, by keeping your eyes open, your psyche open, your being open, it's different. It doesn't eliminate the suffering as a component, but it doesn't come to you as suffering. It comes to you as part of the structure of the yin and yang of the dualistic system that is the world. You know, it has light, it has dark, and you no longer see one as good and one as bad. You just see it as a whole. And that is a kind of knowledge that makes it possible to live it. It doesn't remove you from it. You know, an enlightened person is not removed from yin and yang. They don't suddenly go, oh, I'm above and beyond this. You know, it's the old idea of before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. It changes nothing, but it changes everything. And if you're doing it to think that you are somehow suddenly other, removed from, free of, even transcendent of the universe, it's not completely true. I mean, it's true to a certain degree in that you are in some deeply profound place aware that it is this and beyond. That it is the whole, it is the vastness in which all this is occurring. But in that very moment, you still have to brush your teeth. You still have to do the stuff that's in front of you, some of which will be hard, like using quotes, will be demanding, some of which will not be demanding. It's amazing. Enlightened people have to go through the same stuff unenlightened people do. They just do. And, you know, I think a lot of them, and I don't know, I mean, I'm not one of those people, but to be truly enlightened, I think, is to still face the fact that, you know, that disease comes, that your body will be taken away in some way. And the people that I've read about who've gone through that still suffer, but they do it beautifully.
Would it then still be called suffering then, or is it just always their relationship with whatever thought they're having?
I think they're not relating to it as a bad thing. It's just there. It's just there. This is pain. This is not pain. Oh. Now it's painful. But they're not going, oh my God, this is painful. It's going to go on forever. I can't bear it. What am I going to do? Why me, God? Why did this happen? That's not happening. It's like, oh, this is painful. Because it's part of the stuff of the universe. It's part of the construct of physical time and space. It has pleasure, pain. It's just there. But how you deal with that is the difference. And if you think you are going to get to a place where you are liberated from that, you're wrong. You're not going to be liberated from it in the sense that it won't happen. You'll be liberated from it in terms of your own relationship to it. I can see you're not totally buying this.
No, that is my point.
Oh, okay.
Hard time to me is time is neutral. It's like things are happening, it is no matter what. The hard is your relationship to it in the mind.
That's right.
So the only thing I took umbrage with was that life is mostly difficult, and I guess I don't agree with that. I agree that the mind could often create difficulty or have confusion with what's happening.
Yes, that's exactly right. But the problem is that the mind slips deeply into forgetting. And the pulling it out of forgetting is one of the great challenges of all spiritual practice. And, And you watch that endlessly in people. They have these wonderful moments of awakening, and then a week later, it's like, you know, what's happening? Why did I lose it again? Why does it keep falling away? And it falls away because that's its nature. Our memory loses consciousness over and over and over until it doesn't. And you can try jogging it into place, but in the end, it's not you that makes it happen. You do your part, and it does its part, and in some moment, the partnership is married, it's wedded, and it works.
I was wondering if you have, if there's someone that you don't want to hurt them, but some things have happened, and then you're not ready to say something about what it is, but then you suddenly, there they are, and you like meet them at a gate or something, and they want to say something, like, what do you recommend for that, like with energy?
Honesty is really, I just keep finding, If the universe brings a situation in to you, and it's right in front of you, and you know there's something to be done in that situation, and you've felt that before, and you feel it in the moment, I think you need to, you do it. You just do it. You go into the situation as openly and lovingly and as honestly as you can, and you say what you need to say from that place. I've found that it always works. I always feel trepidatious going into a situation where I know there's going to be pain and difficulty. But every time I get into that room with those people and I start to express myself honestly, all their defenses break down. Because if it's done with love and compassion, they're not frightened of it. They actually want the truth you have to deliver. The people really want it. And if you can do it from a place of kindness, it gets through. If you do it from a place of ego, then it's just pain and conflict. And it just perpetuates itself. But there really is a spiritual perspective, which is what we were talking about before, where you're not relating to the drama, you're not relating to the negativity, you're not relating to the fear, you're just being real. And when you do that, these things break down and you can have a real dialogue. And if it doesn't work for that person, you have done the part that you were meant to do, and that's all that really matters. Ideally, they'll get it. Sometimes they don't. But don't be afraid to do it. Really, I said this from way back when. If it's in front of you, it's yours. If there's a reason why things are brought right to you in life, and you can't say, how did this happen, or why is this happening, or I don't like this happening, it's meant to be there. The universe worked very hard to bring it there. Your job is to be there and just work it. Does that help?
And if you see someone else in immense suffering and you feel like, you have an idea like what the thing is, why it's causing suffering, but it just seems like, I don't know, they're involved in this huge thing that's like going to be just suffering no matter what.
Yeah, well, sometimes there's nothing you can do.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. You can love them, and that actually may add to their suffering.
If you love them?
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah.
It makes them suffer more?
It can, if they're not open. Your love at that moment will be perceived very differently.
But then, if you start feeling like being in that is like causing you, like it's not healthy or whatever?
Yeah, they'll leave it. What can you do? Yeah. You do your best, you know. I mean, you know, we're all in some ways figuring it out as we go, and every situation is its own particular situation. So what you do is you just approach it as best you can. And if some people are just caught in a kind of suffering they can't get out of, leave it to God. It's not you who's going to fix it.
Well, I figured that part out.
Good. It helps because, you know, all of us who think we know the answer, we don't. You know, the answer is bigger than us. And sometimes we will, in our surrender, connect with the answer and be part of it. But a lot of the time it has nothing to do with us. You just be there as best you can for the situation. And, you know, I mean, I know people in this lifetime who are not going to figure it out in this lifetime, at least as far as I can tell. They're just so deeply immersed in their own stuff that it's not going to come through. But it will come through ultimately. It has to. Ultimately, everyone will be awakened. Everyone will figure it out. So that's, I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but it's a deep belief. I don't see how it could end any other way. So, just takes time.
It's not a question, Bruce. It was going to be this question. My question was going to be, what do you do when life feels very hard? or at least the mind tells you it's hard. And I just want to thank you. In 12 years, I can't tell you how many times you've begun to speak and say the exact thing, you know, that's been in my mind quite, and it feels uncanny. I imagine many of us have felt many times. I just want to say thank you.
You're welcome. I mean, I had that from Rudy. You know, I would sit in Rudy's class, and he would always bring up exactly what I was going through. And it's because we're all one. And because we're all going through the same thing, basically, in our own private way and from our own particular angle. But it's all a collective journey. Now, there are people here who are going to say, well, I'm not having a hard time. they will. And this will come back as something that will be meaningful. But mostly, we are so tuned into one another. And particularly in a spiritual class, there's such a kind of collection of consciousness that the person sitting here in this seat becomes a spokesperson for the collective. But it really isn't that they know. It's just when you sit here, you're tapped into something that is shareable and meaningful for all of us. If any one of you were to sit here, it would come through you. Or it can come through you sitting there. I mean, there's this very weird thing about teacher-student thing, where you actually think that one person knows more than the other. It is not true. Student knows as much as the teacher. It's just being given the vocal opportunity to express it. And, you know, it's each of you in your own way, I know, are teachers. And every one of you in this room has an opportunity to speak to other people, and the same kind of truth will come through you. Everybody in this room is that. And you will find your moment to be the voice of truth. And then if you don't own that and start to think, oh my God, I am the voice of truth, which is a real danger, you know, suddenly you know it all, then you become one of the many voices that ultimately helps express this truth into the world. And you learn slowly to become very humble in its presence, because it can be taken away as quickly as it appears, and we are all given the gift of it when we get out of the way. Really, everyone is. As soon as you get out of the way, it's there. I can't tell you how many times I've sat with my students and had them teach me. And most of the time, even in class, when I work with you guys, I'm as much a student of you, of yours, as you are a student of mine. That's a two-way street, and power and position are very ephemeral. You know, they are given to you for a moment, and if you don't abuse it, you can be there for a while. If you abuse it, they knock you off really quickly and in a pretty ugly way. Usually, you have to stay as open and real and honest and ultimately, I think, humble in the role of teacher, in order to be always available to speak what is needed to be spoken. So, anyway, it's not magic, it's just the shared connection. Anybody else? Okey-doke. I'll be here next weekend, and then I'm off until one or two weekends in July, and after that, it's totally unknown. I look forward to seeing you if you're here next week. I need to talk one brief moment about brunch, which is an ongoing source of problem, because a lot of you don't stay for brunch, which is fine, and some of you do stay, but the brunch has a number of aspects. One is we serve food that somebody has to get, and Kat has been the one who's been getting most of it every week. And we ask for a donation for that, and every week nobody gives anything. We also ask for people to bring a few extra things, like, you know, juice and coffee, cake, or things like that. And so often nobody volunteers to do that. And then there's a cleanup at the end, and nobody stays for the cleanup. And so there's really the choice, which I think the easy choice is, well, just forget the brunch. Why bother with this thing when it's becoming a conflicted thing? Or to offer those of you who stay the opportunity to stay consciously and to become part of it, to be part of the bringing things, or to be part of the cleanup, or to be part of the donation to the whole process. It's not complicated. It's just what one normally would do. And I'm told the big excuse for people who don't bring anything is they're not sure they'll be here the next week. Well, what I would say is commit to being here. Make a commitment. Come that week. I will bring something and I will be here. Very simple. Instead of the vagueness which gets you out of having to be responsible. And this all comes down to the core of what I was talking about before. You have to own this thing. And how you do it, it reflects itself in every part of the life experience. The brunch is a simple expression of spiritual responsibility. So if you're failing in spiritual responsibility at the brunch, how are you doing in the rest of your life? You know, where are you not bringing yourself to the table? Where are you not being responsible? And this is a class where you've just sat down and had this huge spiritual meal, bless you. And yet you walk away from it completely irresponsible. It signifies to me that something's not connecting properly. And so all I can do is say that to you. We'll try next week to have one more brunch. If this continues, then really starting in July, we're just going to stop having brunches. And not that they're important. They're really not important. It all started because I would sit, and people would sit with me for an hour or two after class, and I was hungry. You know, and so I said, well, let's have some food while we sit around, you know, and then we started brunch. But I can go without food, and, you know, for a while, it wouldn't hurt me at all. And I really think that we may move in that direction. But for next week, we will have brunch, and those of you who think you will be here could sign the list downstairs to bring something.
When you're not here, there's no brunch.
Usually, yeah. It's just for a lot of reasons, but one of them is there's nobody to clean up, and everybody leaves, and everything is just kind of left there. We just can't do that. I mean, at least when I'm here, there's some vague potential for people to be responsible. You know, but I mean, I would love it to be otherwise. It just doesn't work that way. There's somebody here every week. There's always somebody teaching, and I tell this to people all the time. But if you're sitting here, it's because you're supposed to be sitting here, and something worthy is coming through. If you have a multiple group of teachers, what the value of that, and it's really powerful, is you get to learn to open and do this exercise with multiple people, which allows you to begin to learn how to open to everybody else in your life. Because each teacher is different, each experience is different, and when you go into the world, everyone is different. So finding the mechanism to open to different energy flows is very valuable. Okay, guys, thank you very much for coming.